Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Outlet. And our guest today is a friend of mine and former employee, worship leader at Orchard Hill Church, which is the church I currently work at. It is Orchard Hill Church. And hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Outlet. And our guest today is a friend of mine and a former worship leader at Orchard Hill Church, and it's Chris Jamison. Chris has led worship at Orchard Hill Church and been involved in singing there for since 2017 up till just like 6 months ago. And he's a really good friend, but he also, something cool about his story and his testimony is he was a third place finalist on the singing show The Voice, TV show, if you've never heard of it. But today, me and Chris just talk about worship, what it actually means to worship, his experience on The Voice, and really, how do our hearts actually need to reflect God during worship? How can we love him more during worship? And is worship just singing? These are just some of the things we're talking about today. And if you enjoy this episode, please be sure to leave a rating or review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to this at. Without further ado, please welcome to the show, Chris Jamison. That man. So what have you been up to recently? I know like you left Orchard Hill to actually don't even know like why like where you went to go to. I think you might have told me a little bit, but what has life been like for you recently?
It's been good. I left in May just to try something different, really, just because I wanted to. I mean, I loved the stuff that I was doing at the church and really enjoyed the people and really didn't want to leave. But there was also this part of me that was like, oh, I kind of want to try something different and just kind of outside of my comfort zone. Because I was pretty comfortable where, like, I was comfortable with the work that I was doing at the church. And, like, I knew that I enjoyed it and I felt like I was passionate about it. And, but there was, like, always this thing in the back of my mind. Like, I love... One of my favorite things is like sitting down with people and just kind of like this, but like sitting down with people, talking to them and like hearing about their stories and what they're doing and why they're doing what they're doing. And there was like a year and a half ago where I got coffee with a guy at the church who owns a gifting, I don't know how to describe, like a gift card company where they sell businesses and they sell to corporations. But one of the big things is like this app that he's developed, not him, well, it was his idea. And then he's got obviously a giant team of people. Long story short, there's a bunch of different sites. He's got this really cool vision for essentially like your normal plastic gift card, getting rid of that because there's so much like fraudulent activity attached to plastic gift cards because criminals, people use them to obviously like make transactions and do business with gift cards so that it kind of flies under the rails. So like one of the big apps he's working on is this digital gift card where you can essentially text somebody a gift card, they can push it to their debit card, and then anytime they swipe their debit card, it deducts the amount of money from the gift, like the gift card's in their debit card, and it just it reimburses your debit card the amount of the gift card up until you've reached the full, because then you also have places where like you'll go and you may have like $2 left on a gift card, but you're not going to go somewhere and spend $2. But if you go to that restaurant and swipe your debit card, it'll use the $2 and then you'll, you know, pay the rest or whatever. But
it's
cool stuff.
That's actually really, that'd be really useful.
So that's the company. I work for that company now. So we sell merchant gift cards like Starbucks, different brands. And so I work on the team that manages kind of those relationships and,
So here's a question I have for
you. It's really tied to music, as you can probably tell.
Tied to music. Seriously. Well, so this is, I was planning on asking this later, but I'll ask it now since it's brought up. But so as someone who was full-time vocational ministry, you did that for, was it 6 years?
5 years.
Five years. Okay. Yeah. Did that for 5 years. So a pretty good chunk of time, full-time vocational ministry. Someone who I've heard people say you were a professional paid Christian, right? In quotations, if you guys can't see the quotations, right? But you're paid to do your job, which is to lead worship and to connect with others and to engage a church in singing, yeah. right? So what has that shift been like from being a, again, quote, professional Christian to someone who now is an unpaid Christian, again, in quotes, but just like, what's that shift been like from being somebody who's like, that was your job and now it's not
mandatory? I've enjoyed it in the sense of now I get to volunteer and serve the church with no strings attached. So like, I'm not coming, yeah. I'm truly able to like, cause there's lots of different ways in which people can volunteer in ministry. And that can be all kinds mm-hmm. of different, like whether you're ushering or, you know, working behind the table, serving coffee and stuff like that. But there's something yeah. really cool about being able just to come, not be paid, and just like use the gifts that God has given you, whether that's like musical, whether that's simply the time and the ability to, you know, be in ministry. So it's been really cool. It was kind of weird at first, to be honest, coming, like serving the first few times where, you know, you're so embedded into, and it's probably this way for like any church, or not any church, but like any job that you do where like you leave and then you come back and
yeah.
like you were so embedded in what was going on and then now you're not. And so also then you know, I was helping to make decisions for the worship ministry at the church and like lead different elements of it. And now it's like, you can't just come in here and start doing all the things that you were doing before that because it's not your role anymore. And so I just think it was, and it was also just, you know, you spend a lot of time with all these people and then you end up, you know, not seeing them for a couple of weeks and you come back and, you know, it was just a little bit of a transition, but, I would say that it's been good. It's been good for my family in the sense that we get to, one of the things that we were really looking forward to is just getting to go to church together. As a family, which, you know, we've after so long, especially like after 5 years, you get in a routine and it's not a gigantic deal. But then when you actually, after a couple of weeks of going together as a family, even with kids and getting them out the door and everything, it's definitely a good thing to be able to do that and go there and worship together. So,
yeah, no, that's good. Cause I feel like sometimes I even ask myself the question when I see like, obviously at our church and like so many different churches, you just have like these incredible volunteers who like people, they work, you know, they'll work 40, 50 hours at their job to make money. And then they'll come into the church and then volunteer another 7 to 10 hours a week or whatever it is. And I see them and I'm like, okay, like they're serving the church in a great way. I was like, I know I'm serving the church. I'm serving Christ in a good way. I was like, but if it wasn't my job, would I have the same like heart and desire to serve as these people do? And so that's something I have to even like ask myself that. And so I feel like that's a good, it seems like it's a healthy transition to figure out like, no, it's actually, it is a good thing not to just like, in a sense be required to serve.
Yeah. And I think in the music ministry too is interesting in the sense where like you do have some churches who have a strict like volunteer only position as far as like who's serving on the team. You have some churches that are kind of supplementing with paid musicians that kind of come in and everything. And this isn't really a conversation to debate whether that should or shouldn't be a thing, but it's more so like I knew that when I stepped away from the staff, I definitely didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to have any sort of like, hey, we'll pay you to be here for a certain amount of week. Like it was important for me to like step away and just be someone that was there to serve the church and the community and not there with like any sort of, I don't want to say strings attached, but I guess strings attached. I just wanted to serve at least for a season or a period of time.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Well, no, we did it a little backwards, but I'd usually do this at the start with like people I talk to or have on the show. But so tell me, I know you, but tell the audience a little bit about yourself. Kind of, you can be as descriptive as you want to. Obviously there's a big TV moment in your life that people may know about you. You don't have to talk about that at all, but just a little bit about yourself.
Now I have to talk about it, Nick.
Now, see, I didn't let you off on that, but But yeah, tell me a little bit about yourself, like kind of where you came from, how the Lord brought you to him, and how you got to the place you are today.
Yeah, so I started singing and doing music when I was like fifth grade. It's kind of the earliest memory I have of it. And at the time, there wasn't really a whole lot from a musical standpoint for me to do other than participate in like different singing groups where we would pretty much go out and wear these cheesy costumes and do Broadway tunes and sing and dance and whatever and play for like old people's drums. And that's how I got into music at first.
Did it always come pretty easy to you? Like just music and singing, or is it something you kind of had to...
I guess I'd compare it to like, I don't feel that I think it came easy to, Well, I wouldn't say easy. It was something that was always very intriguing to me. Like I was always kind of drawn to watching people sing and seeing not just the way that they, not just how they sound, but like seeing the way that they command a stage and all of that stuff. It was all, it just always drew me in, and I knew that I enjoyed that. And then I knew that I liked music and that I had some sort of singing ability. I mean, when you're 13 and your voice is like higher than I'll get out, you kind of, everybody at some point, at that point, it's kind of hard to tell, oh, is he going to be a good singer or not? You know, after time, it gets ironed out a bit.
Is there a pretty good drop off for people who like after they hit puberty, that's like, oh, their voice changes significantly enough to where they're not like as good of a singer anymore? Is that pretty,
I don't know.
Usually pretty.
I've never heard of anybody who like was really good when they were was really good prior to puberty and then not good after. I'd say probably some people bridge that gap a bit better than others, but
yeah.
I can't say for certain that that's like a...
Okay, yeah, I was just curious because I never really thought about that, but yeah, continue.
But I did all that stuff musically. We didn't grow up Catholic. I wouldn't say that we were like super heavily involved in the church.
Yeah.
I'm a triplet, so it's me and two girls, and then I have an older brother and a little sister, so there was a lot of activities and things going on and stuff to do, I always believed in God, but that was kind of the extent of it. Went to college for sound recording, and while I was in college my sophomore year, I got an email from a professor at this college. And so I guess I'll step back for a second. I went to a school in Columbus, Ohio called Capital University, and I went there only because they had a program where you didn't have to be a music major to be in like the sound recording department.
Okay.
You could just go in, be a sound recording major, be involved in like that aspect of the music world. But instead of having an instrument, you would minor in like business or something. So that's what I did. And did that my freshman year, realized after my freshman year that I didn't want to be the one hitting the record button. I wanted to be the one on the other side of the glass recording and doing my own thing. So I switched my major my sophomore year to business, but probably in September, end of September, beginning of October of my sophomore year, this new professor showed up on campus and he didn't know anyone. And he got, and I don't, to this day, I don't know him, but he got this email from the voice casting department and they said, hey, do you know anyone that would want to audition? And he's like, no, but I'll share it with, I guess he passed the email off to the head of the technology department at that time. Yeah. And the school I was going to was a music school, but a lot of the vocalists were like classically trained. There wasn't a ton of like people doing pop style music. And I was involved in like this cover band on campus where we would go and play school events and different stuff like that. And so I wouldn't say I stuck out for that reason, but there just weren't a lot of people there that were doing like pop style music. They forwarded the email to me, and around that time, my girlfriend, my now wife, was telling me, her family was telling me I should audition for The Voice. I had auditioned for like American Idol, America's Got Talent, and never got anywhere. And I was just like, yeah, I really don't feel like doing all that stuff again. But because I was involved in the music technology program at the school, I had access to all the recording studios, and I had friends that were instrumentalists, so I got my friend who was a guitar player, and we went into the recording studio, put up a camera, recorded three or four songs, and then I sent that in and pretty much just told everybody around me, like, hey, I did this, and now we can all move on with our lives, and you can stop auditioning.
It was a thing I did, just forget about it.
Yeah, let's just move on with our lives. And it just kind of became something that I didn't expect it to become, and went through that. So this was when I was 19. So I finished that in December of 2014, finished in third place. I prefer to always say second runner up. I think when you throw the three in there, it just starts to like, it sounds so much better.
Second runner up sounds way better, right?
Yeah. I was the second runner up. And so after finishing there for like 5 years, I kind of just did like freelance music stuff. And traveled and played different shows and gigs in different places. And it was great. I mean, it was an incredible experience for a 19-year-old kid with no responsibilities really to go and kind of get to be involved in such a cool thing and rub shoulders with really cool people. But
yeah,
hindsight's always 20/20. And I always describe the experience as like, it was God's way of, and I didn't know this at the time, but it was God's way, I feel like, of showing me, hey, there's this lifestyle out there that I think all of us at some level want to be successful, right? We want to be known for what we're doing, whether you're in ministry or whether you're like, you want to have a good reputation. You want people to like
some type of a legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I would probably, if you would have asked me back then if I wanted to be famous, I would have probably said no. But of course, there's a part of me like, yeah, I want people to know who I am. I was a performer my whole life. I responded, obviously, to people responding well to my singing. And so I wanted to be known. But I think what I realized after going through the show was like, yeah, but that was almost God's way of being like, hey, here's this thing that I think that you think you want. So I'll give you a little taste of it, only for you to finally realize that it's ultimately not what's going to satisfy you. Mm. And so that's kind of where I'd gone through some stuff after the show for like a year, year and a half, where like things weren't really working out the way I wanted them to. What happened was I was kind of put in this lane on the TV show. It's a reality show, but at the end of the day, like, you have to have different characters. Like, you can't have all of the same people. Yeah. So like, I was put into this lane of like your Justin Bieber-y, Justin Timberlake, pop boy band kind of person. And that's not just like, it just wasn't a representation of who I was. But when I was on the show, I was the yes man. So like, I didn't want to screw the opportunity up. So anything you
just like, yeah, I'm not going to do something to mess it. Like, yeah.
Which my, at the time too, my Jansen, my wife now, she was, I remember the one episode I wore like a necklace in the episode. And after like when the show aired, she was like, why did you wear a necklace? And at least I think she said this afterwards, or it might've been during whenever she saw a picture or something, but like, they were just like, hey, why don't you wear a necklace? And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. If you think I should, then fine. But I pretty much just
so
did whatever
they
wanted
pick out. Like, how much do they do for like, to prep you to like, do they pick out like your outfits and, and like, do you have like a, so they pick out your outfits and everything. So they're totally dressing you the whole time.
Yeah. They don't force you to like, wear something to wear, but at the time I'm like, well, I only shop at Target, so I'm assuming what you're going to recommend that I wear is probably better than what I would pick for myself.
Yeah.
But anyways, one of the things which actually led me, growing up, my wife's family would always go to the Orchard Hill Christmas Eve service. That was like a tradition for them, and so I kind of, my wife and I have been together since we were 13, so I would go every year with them to the Christmas Eve service. And in 2015, which would have been a year after The Voice, we went to the Christmas Eve service, and the whole sermon was on finding your identity in Christ and not in the things that you do. And it was a really like fitting, timely message for some of the other conversations I was having with others at that time. And just about like next steps, like, what should I do with my life? I was just on this crazy experience, and now I'm back in Pittsburgh on my parents' couch. Like, what do I do with this, and where do I go? And so, yeah, I went to that Christmas Eve service. And then one of the illustrations that the pastor gave was someone giving their blind audition on The Voice. And it was just a very weird, I mean, nobody obviously in that room had been through that experience. And so I knew it was a weird enough moment for me to
it stuck realize, out of the way.
Like I couldn't, like, I remember like, I just remember exactly where I was sitting. I remember like almost getting like goosebumps while I'm sitting there. I just like felt weird. Like I felt like I could not get up from that moment and not respond in some way to what had just occurred. And yeah. I just started going to church, and that's where I would say, kind of like how we started this conversation talking about, you know, repentance and, you know, understanding what forgiveness is and understanding what's been done for us through Christ. That was kind of where all of that began to make sense. And I began,
because you feel like you've grown up hearing those things, and then it kind of,
well, you always think of it as kind of like almost like a mythical sort of thing, like, oh, there's a guy named Jesus who floated around and did stuff, and and now he's, but even up until that point, like, I had known about Jesus, but I didn't know like what that meant for me today in 2023. Like, I didn't know the significance of it as we live this life now currently. You almost get stuck in the mindset of like, well, I'm looking back at history, and it is history, but it's very much applicable to, that's what I think is so incredible about the Bible, is like, you hear people say sometimes, well, this book can't apply to me. It's thousands of years old. And I look at them, and if that person actually read the Bible, they would realize, oh, these people, the problems that they have, they might look different culturally, but they're the exact same problems that we have today.
Yeah.
Like, we're not same that thing. Evolved. We think we're more evolved than we actually are. Well, no, we just have other things to distract us. The same problem is the problem at the core of it. We're all sinful people that just want to be greedy and want to, you know, all these different things. And I think that's what's so fascinating about the Bible, is how applicable it is to our lives here thousands of years later. And so that's essentially where I would say that, like, you know, I understood what it meant to surrender your life to Christ. And I didn't want to get involved in the music stuff at the church, just because I didn't want it to be like, oh, the kid from The Voice wants to go and sing on stage and, you know, whatever. I just didn't, but that was also stupid of me, because it's like, well, finally you've decided to use the gift that you've been given to glorify God. And now you're like, oh, I don't want it to be all about me. Like, as if it's as if I'm, it was just a weird, I clearly needed to get over that aspect of it. So I did, I started to sing and volunteer at the church. And, in 2019, we've always wanted to have kids. I've always wanted to, you know, get married and have a family. And I just didn't want to travel around and play music and try to make that my life. I knew that it wasn't going to be good for me from any standpoint. So at the time, I knew that I loved the church. I loved the people. I loved Jesus. And I loved the impact the ministry had on my life, and not just my life, but my wife's life, and now my family's life. And I wanted to be a part of that. And ultimately, really, it's what led me now to the job that I have too, because that's how I met the person I now work for. So,
yeah, no, that's cool. And I think it's, I think it's cool, because the cool thing I think we don't always realize about Christians, we don't realize about church, is obviously, if we've grown up in church, you know about like spiritual gifts, and we're supposed to use our spiritual gifts to build up the church, to build up the body. But I don't think we always realize the creative ways that we can use it, like that we can use our gifts and use just outside of just spiritual gifts, use our talents to build up the church too. Like, I forget how many episodes ago, but I had this guy who on the podcast, who he's a singer and a songwriter, just like pretty low key, but he goes to a church out in Oregon, and the church, they only do like, they only sing worship songs and do worship songs during their services that their congregation like writes and then like records and then like produces and these things. And I think that's such a thing that, that sometimes is missed out on a lot of churches. We just don't always utilize people's creativity and just creativity and a way to glorify God, you know.
And I also think the word creativity is interesting because a lot of the time it's, I was just talking to someone the other day, a lot of the times the word creativity is applied to the arts, but in reality, you have to be creative in every, like even the role, the job that I have now, it's not in the music field. It's not in the arts field. It's in the, you know, business, more corporate sort of world. But yeah. I would argue that I'm just as creative in that environment as I am when I'm writing and recording music. And yeah. I think there's a lot of, a lot of the times, which is kind of tied to what you were saying, like that people don't realize, oh, like even the fact that I have some extra time now to be able to, you know, that's a gift. Like, how can I use that? Mm-hmm. How can I steward that gift that I have? Well, it doesn't have to just be a talent, or it doesn't have to just be, you know, maybe I can, you know, figure out how to, you know, disciple a younger generation because I have more time, yeah. like serve as a small group leader or something because my kids are all yeah. grown and, you know, all these, there's a lot of different things that, again, at times it can take some creativity to figure out what those things are or how you can use them to actually serve the people around you. But I think we shortchange ourselves if we think that our gifts have to be like some, you know, crazy outward facing thing.
Oh yeah. And well, there's just like almost like a, like kind of a romanticization of like what it means to be a, like people are like, I'm just a creative, you know, yeah. there's like, I just like, it's just like weird abstract thing. Like, I'm just a creative. Like, I just like, I go to coffee shops and I hang out, you know, I don't hang out at my house.
Probably the least like that, creative, but... creative.
That makes sense. That's fun. How do you mean by that? Just,
well, because
you just...
I'm not wired mm. to like wake up at 10 and just like write songs. I think when I would tell people that I was yeah. a full-time musician, that sometimes they just thought like, yeah, so like, what do you do all day? Do you wake up and then just like think of a song?
Just wait till it hits you.
And then just, yeah, like have some coffee. Like, and I've just always been very, which is probably also why I'm not doing music full-time now, but I'm a very like type A spreadsheet oriented driven person. And honestly, I found myself more drawn to kind of the back end of the music business more so than outperforming, just because up until that point in my life, I had spent all of my time singing and learning how to sing. And now I was kind of yeah. in this new environment where I was supposed to be like running a business, and I had no experience in the industry at all. So I kind of mm-hmm. was really enjoying the, you know, sending emails, booking, contracts, finances, spread, like all these different things.
It's a crazy thing to enjoy too. Some people
well,
say.
Yeah. yeah. It's, yeah. Which I didn't realize at the time. But I've just kind of always been drawn to that sort of stuff. But, yeah. again, yeah. it still takes creativity. Like you gotta creatively format a spreadsheet sometimes. It can't just be cells on a page. Sometimes you gotta get fancy with it and you gotta create hey, what's the formula that I'm gonna use for this? How do I get percentages?
Especially
to show
if you
up
use like
all these different
Excel right. Because like it's there's a whole like I've seen people I use it in the most basic way possible, but it's just like if you can use it right, you can like do some magic with Excel. But I don't know. I think that's a cool thing to know too, because it seems like people have always created this like you're either that or that. You're either just like very analytically minded or you're creative minded, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's cool to even just hear that, you know, for you it's been a little bit of a like a mold breaking too, because like you are very just kind of like black and white person, but it's like no, you still, if people saw you, be like, yeah, Chris is a creative dude, he sings, he can write songs, you know, he's like yeah. he's into the arts and things. So it's just like, but no, it doesn't have to be a that or that. It can be a both and, right? You can mm-hmm. do both things.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was reminded by just like the use of creativity in the church. My buddy read a book, and I don't know what the book was called, but he just shared with me something just like how creative our like Jesus was in his own life, and really how creative God is overall too, right? And the example that the book gave, and he told me, was like Jesus obviously was God. He could have, in the situation with the blind man, right? He could have just said, okay, like your blindness is gone, you could see now, you know, like he had the power to do that. God has the power to just do that. But what do we see Jesus do? He kneels down in the mud, he puts mud on his fingers, and he wipes it on his eyes. And like it's a very just one personal way to do it, but one a very just creative way to go about healing someone's blindness. Like it yeah. wasn't like oh, this is magic mud that Jesus has to use. And then he's like, okay, let me use this mud down here and then rub it in your eyes. It's like, no, God just chose to work in that way. One, to be personal, but two, also just, I think it's a form of creativity that we see him use.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a super under appreciated thing in the church nowadays. But so I didn't know that you and your, you said you and your wife have been together since you were 13.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I met her. I'm a triplet. So I had two sisters and they played soccer with her when they started playing soccer together when we were like 11.
Okay.
She was like best friends with my sisters for a period of time. And then, I kind of always played it like I was annoyed that she was always around. Like, oh, wait, she always sleeps over and she's always around, like hanging out with my sisters and whatever. It's just so annoying. but I obviously didn't think it was annoying. And yeah, now we got married in 2017 and we have a 1-year-old August and a 3-year-old Scarlet, and our third is on the way. So,
oh, congratulations. That's so exciting.
I don't know if we've officially announced. I don't know when this comes out, but we're announcing this weekend. So I'm assuming I'll be.
Okay. It'll come out after that.
Okay, great.
So you're good. We won't spoil anything.
Good.
I'll spoil anything. So were you guys started dating at 13?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. We went to go see our first like actual date, I think, was to go see Alvin and the Chipmunks at the movie theater.
That's a heck of a date. That's what
it was that kind of date, right? Like, now, where you go and you sit there and you're like, I guess, supposed to hold hands because you're dating. But like, then your hands start to get really sweaty and you're not sure, like, do I pull away? Do I not pull away? Should I? Is it weird if I'm the first one? That's like, yeah, it was pretty awkward. But we've got,
what's a middle school relationship? You're like, I hugged her today, dude.
Yeah,
she's
like,
oh, no way. But okay, so what I'm curious about, as being 13 year olds, and I know, so it's like dealing with high schoolers and being in relationships, I know that's a big part of my testimony even when I was in high school. But what has been the navigation of trying to find, being in a relationship that long, trying to find your own identity apart from that person, especially in Christ apart from that person, right? And like walking through that, because obviously from, you know, starting to date at 13 and like middle school and high school, like the thing that I always see middle schoolers and high schoolers struggling with is their identity. They're asking questions, who am I? Who am I? Even when you're in college, you're like, who am I? Who actually am I? And I struggled with, I was in high school, I was in a somewhat long-term relationship, but I was just like, I don't really know who I am apart from this person. Mm-hmm. And for a little bit. So what has that been like for you guys to try and navigate, if that's not too personal of a question, but navigate that?
Yes, we always say that it would have looked so much different if we were Christians when we were younger, because we weren't Christians when we were 13. This all happened like right before we ended up getting engaged, and so the short answer would be we would do things a lot differently than the way that we did them. And I think it was mainly because from like an individual standpoint too, like I would definitely say that I think we do make it more complicated too at times when we're all trying to like ask the question, well, who am I and what am I supposed to do with my life? And I think sometimes it's like just easier to say, it's just easier to break it down and be like, you are somebody that was created in the image of God. And each of us is born given some reason, purpose for being here because God created us. That's all the purpose we need. Yeah. I as a performer my entire life, and this is something I'm so tied to performance still, even as a Christian. And it's constantly something that I'm fighting against. Like, you don't have to please every single person. You don't have to make this other individual like you, and therefore you have to now act a certain way to get them to like, that's what I remember even like in high school when I was, you know, Jansen and I were dating each other, and I just remember spending so much time thinking about like, oh, does she like this or does she not like this? Or should I wear these shorts or these shirt like that? And then obviously some, not just like my clothing attire, but, you know, oh, she didn't respond to my text very quickly. So like, what does that mean? Or like, and all these different things. And it's just, all things that were essentially out of my control, but all of them were tied to what I thought was like my value and my worth.
Yeah.
And I think we just, yeah, because I also don't want to dumb it down and say like it's not important to ask the question like what's my purpose and why am I here, and because I do think that's important, but I also don't think that like we have to have this like we don't have to have this like crazy revelation one day and suddenly we're the next person that created and invented the most incredible thing. Like maybe God just wants you to, you know, be a friend to the person that lives next door to you. And like maybe he just wants you to work a specific job that I don't know. I just think that it's not as it's okay if we ask the question, hey, what's your purpose? And your purpose is, well, God created me for a purpose. And I do think our purposes are always changing too. Like we're not doing the same things. Like we're always evolving as human beings. And so it's like we're not evolving in the sense of like we're growing and learning new things and meeting new people and having new experiences. And so we have different things now to offer and share. And we discover new things we didn't know we liked before. And like I'm not the same person I was when I was 13. And, you know, 20 years from now, I'm probably not going to be the same person.
Yeah.
I never thought about that as far as like our purpose is changing, but I do think that I think our main core purpose stays the same, but the way we live that out changes, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Well, I think that's a refreshing way to look at it too. Cause when we talk about, or when high schoolers or even college students or even, you know, people in their upper 20s, 30s and everything, when they're, I feel like that's usually the age range you hear people saying like, who am I? I don't know what I'm part of. Especially Christians. Now it's like, if you're not a Christian, that's like, I don't know where you're trying to find your identity from. Right. But especially for Christians.
Well, that is your identity. Like, if you're not a Christian, then your identity is whatever you do.
Exactly. So I think that's where we as Christians, I think having a simplistic outlook of it is so refreshing to hear. Cause it's like, no, my identity is not in, it's not in my job. It's not even necessarily what I can bring to the table. My identity is simply just that I'm redeemed by God and that he loves me. Like that, it can just be as simple as something as that, you know?
Especially now with like our third on the way, we had an ultrasound the other day and it blows my mind at like the fact that this little human being is growing inside of another human being. Like when you ask yourself, why was I created? And like, what's my purpose? Even if you can't answer that question, think about all of the things that had to go right for you to be brought into this world in the way that you were brought into this world. Like, if that doesn't give you, that should be, cause I think sometimes people will say, you know, my identity's in Christ, and people hear that and they kind of think like, like that's just an easy Christian answer that you're going to say because you don't really know what else to say. But it's like, no, like that doesn't mean you just sit around and you don't do anything, but it does mean that like your worth and your identity is not attached to anything that you do. And so therefore you are free to do what it is that you feel God has called you and led you to do because of what Christ has done for you. And so, you know, for me, like if a performance that you know, doesn't go right, if something happens where like, I don't know, where like, I can't even have the job that I currently have. Like, even if my voice gives out, I never sing again. Trust me, it'll be awful. I'll be very upset and sad, but my identity is not tied to the quality of my singing. There's a lot of other ways in which I can fulfill whatever it is that God has for me to do on this earth, if I can't sing. And I think we attach it because like, what's the question you ask when you meet someone for the first time? Hey, how are you? Yeah. So what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, to be honest, really, I mean,
we tie people's jobs to like who they are, really.
Yeah. And that is nothing like it just, I mean, it has something to do with who they are, but it's not the main thing. It's just a thing that you do because we all have to make money somehow and live in this world and operate. And
yeah,
but yeah,
especially in American culture, it is just so much about like what you do. Yeah, it's about like what you do for work, like what's your career. And yeah. So I would almost wonder, I've never asked somebody this, but I almost wonder if I just like say, hey, like, what's your name? And I'd be like, so like, who are you? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, like, no, not what you do, not like where you're from, but like, really, who are you? Yeah. I would wonder, even if somebody asked me that, I would wonder, I'd be like, well, I don't know exactly how to answer that off the top
of my
head.
Yeah, because how many people do you know that like have the same or similar, like work in a similar field, but like their personalities are completely different? So it's for us to say that like every single doctor is a certain demeanor and a certain type of person with a certain like that has nothing to do with that doesn't tell us anything about who they are. It just tells us about the profession. Yeah. I mean, it does tell us that like, oh, maybe they, you know, like medicine or
they're wired maybe a certain way to like want to do that. But, but especially in like, you know, you could like especially we think of jobs that maybe have a lower barrier to entry as mm-hmm. like a doctor. But you think of somebody just like, okay, working at a grocery store, you're going to have a wide range of people. It's like, oh, like, what do you do? Or it's like somebody working at, you know, an accountant. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They might be wired in a way that like numbers make sense to them, but I guarantee there's a lot of accountants out there who just like maybe sitting, that's just kind of how their life went, and sitting behind a desk isn't their big thing, and they're wired a completely different way. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'd be curious to just even ask people like, so like, who are you? Because I would be.
I wouldn't know how to answer you.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, I probably wouldn't know how to answer you.
I probably wouldn't know how to answer either.
But I think it's an interesting question because it's so easy for us as Americans. We just tie our entire worth, even without us knowing, our entire identity into just like what we do. And that's what I was talking to somebody a while ago, and I think he was telling me he's like, he struggles with wanting to leave a legacy, which is something I have to struggle with too. It's like wanting to leave a legacy. Like, this is what I want people to remember me by. But as Christians, like, our legacy is, if we're just like, well, I need to do something that people remember me by, like, I need to be something that I'm like not forgotten when I die, or that people can be like, yeah, that was Nick. As Christians, we kind of, I think I kind of have to check myself on that and be like, no, it's like, if I'm just being remembered for like what I do, even if it's like glorify, like I want to be remembered for, you know, glorifying God, that's a noble honor, but it's like it'd be best if I wasn't remembered, it was just Christ that was remembered after me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think I even have to wrestle with that as like my legacy, because I think that's what can be coupled with is our career, because we want to build up this career so then we're excel really well and then people remember us because of what we did.
Rather than having your legacy be tied to like family and like leaving your family something, not just monetarily speaking, but like raising a family that is in the Lord and raising them up to, you know, live a godly life. I think that that's I think we sometimes think of legacy as like, how much money can I leave my kids, when in reality it's like, if my kids remember me for anything, I would want them to remember me for being a man that sought the Lord in all things, through all things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because even you think of like just the multiplication from like, say you only have three kids, and then those three kids are know and love the Lord, and then they raise their families to know and love the Lord, and then they raise their families to know and love the Lord, and now you have a whole line and just a whole family of people who love the Lord just because one person was faithful, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a good way to think of it too. But so one last thing I wanted to ask, I won't take up too much of your time, but one last thing I wanted to ask, just specifically, since you were somebody who did lead, I'll say in preface to the question, who did lead music at a church, something I always kind of wrestle with and struggle with is this idea of us calling like singing at church as calling that worship. Because what I'm worried in some ways, what it's done is like, it's kind of just narrowed and like boxed our minds up to think like, if I were to ask somebody, what's worship? They'd be like, singing songs, you know? And so do you think that we've kind of done a disservice in like Christian culture to call worship to call singing and music worship to the extent where people just kind of associate with that? Or
yeah,
is that maybe a fair? Yeah. You think we have?
Yeah. I think it's pretty. Yeah. I know for sure whenever I started coming to, when I started going to church, I thought that worship, I thought that that meant worship was the beginning of the service. And then we sat down for the sermon and listened to the person deliver a talk.
Yeah.
I think it's incredibly important. That's why I always like to, and it gets a little, I think that it's difficult now, I think, to separate the two, because you have churches, you have Christian musicians and like artists that are worship leaders that lead worship at churches that also are touring songwriters and, you know, recording their own albums and stuff like that. And leading, well, I guess that's not really a big, I guess that's a whole different conversation about what that actually, how that lives within the world of like church and what should or shouldn't occur at church. But I,
yeah, you say they're like a worship singer though. It's like, it's still tying. It's still, that's like our main tie of what.
Yeah,
of what
I think
is
culturally speaking, worship is tied to music. But that's one thing that I've always just tried to view myself as a song leader, and that's it. I don't want to, even when I'm singing on a platform for a church service, I'm intentionally, I'm intentionally treating that differently than I would if it was a show where, because I still play shows where like they're my own shows, like people buy tickets to come to a show. That I have a different role. My role is that's an entertainment thing. Like I'm here to like interact with you, entertain you, and glorify God in the process. But it's got a different vibe than us coming together, saying that we're gathering here to worship the Lord together as a unified body of people. I'm not there to entertain you at all. I'm simply there to lead the music for you to engage with God corporately as a body of people and individually. If I do anything to pull away from that, I would say that that's doing the service and the congregation a disservice, rather than actually helping to lead them in worship. Because when you walk, like everything you do in some ways can be an act of worship, should be an act of worship. So like when you sit down and that's why like when I'll be at the church and I'll be, you know, praying or saying something, I try to, may we continue to worship you as we, you know, if I'm praying or something, maybe we continue to worship you, God, as we continue to hear the reading and preaching of your word, recognizing that it's our sole source of truth for our lives. I try to make a point to bridge those two worlds together, because it's a worship service. It's not a worship set followed by teaching. But, yeah, I don't know if that actually answered your question or not.
No, yeah, that's good. I think, because it's like singing songs to God is 100% an act of worship.
Yes.
It's just the thing I think about a lot is just like, so I think so many people just think like this, we just compartmentalized what worship is. Singing is worship. Singing is worship. That's not all worship is.
Yeah.
You know, And I've even, you know, growing up, I grew up at a small Baptist church, and it's like the big thing was always music, right? So it's just like the music was never like, it was either too much of like a rock concert for the people who had been there for 150 years, or it wasn't enough of a rock concert for the people who just joined, you know? And it was just this always big thing. And I remember just like walking out and just walking out of churches and been like, people have been like, man, worship was really good today.
Yeah.
Or they're like, man, worship wasn't so great today. And I just feel like so many people have a misunderstanding of what actual worship is,
yeah.
And that being a heart posture and not just like was the singer, did they sound good, were they, yeah. You know, were the drums.
Well, and it's hard because how much of from a music standpoint, like, I think music is important, and I think that God wouldn't have devoted a whole book in the Bible to it if it wasn't an important thing. Music has a unique thing that, I don't know how to explain it. There's just something unique about music, but there's something unique that happens when you put instruments and voices together, especially in the context of like nothing is more powerful in my opinion than like being in a room full of people and they're all singing the exact same thing loudly.
Oh yeah.
It's just powerful. And
yeah.
So
and it's always a common across like all church traditions throughout history too. It's like,
right.
Music has always been, that's always been one of the things that the church has done.
Right.
You know?
But it's also such in today's world now, in today's culture, it's such a heavily commercialized thing.
Yeah.
Where now you also have, and I'm not even talking about Christian music, I'm just talking about music in general, but it's also now commercialized from a Christian standpoint as well. And so that gets also into a broader question of like, how much influence does the culture have on your church and how much influence does your church have on the culture? And I think you see people handle that well, and you see churches not handle that well. And they kind of allow the culture to drive what the church does or doesn't do. Because I think I always said, we always talked a lot about like the songs that we sing at the church too, like the words, the theology, the churches that these songs are coming from. Are they churches that we would align with theologically? Do we not align with them theologically? Should we sing their songs? Should we not sing their songs? And so I think as a worship leader, you have to pay attention to, you know, there's something about it, which even our pastor at the church always says, like, a lot of people aren't going to remember my sermon, but they'll remember the chorus that we sang of that one song. And music has a way of sticking in our heads. And the last thing I want is someone to be walking around with a song stuck in their head that's theologically incorrect.
It's just not right.
It's just not true. Like I always made the joke about the one song. I hope the person that wrote the song never heard this, never hears this either. But like the songs that talk, well, I guess I won't say a specific song, but like songs that talk about like ushering in the Holy Spirit to like come into this place. And I just sit there sometimes and I'm like, doesn't the Holy Spirit live within every believer?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do we have to call it into the room? Is it waiting?
Like it's external.
Is it waiting outside the door that we have to like open the door and let them in? I know that's kind of like a, you know, I know what they're saying with the song.
Yeah.
I get
it. Yeah, it's a fair like,
but it's also,
I think it's an important thing to be like, we should be nitpicky about the songs we sing.
Yeah.
Right?
And now I'm not the gatekeeper of all things theological
right,
on what
right.
song should or shouldn't be singing.
You are. Don't you are. I'm
just, well, because the other part thing is too is like it's tough because like there's some songs that are really great.
And, oh yeah.
Like but they're maybe from different churches that we may not align with theologically. And we're like, well, what if someone listens to ours? And this gets like into the nitty gritty of, but like, what if someone listens to our song, goes and finds a song on YouTube and then finds a sermon from the pastor that's preaching there and happens to listen
like,
to it.
I wanna...
Yeah. There's a lot of things that have to occur in that scenario, but it's still not, it's still possible. And like, you don't want to,
it does happen too. It happens enough to where it's like, you have to think about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But
no, I think it's if we think what like singing and worship actually is, which is like it's not just something that like feeds us, and it's not just something like this makes me feel good, but it's an actual declaration, God, I'm saying these things and I'm praising you because these things are true about you because you're good, and we probably should care what the words that we're saying is, right? Mm-hmm. So I've had to catch myself that too, because especially songs I've heard tons of times or grown up here, and I'm like, how often do I, you know, it's a thing, like you close your eyes, you sit in it and you're reflecting on who God is, but how often am I like, okay, what am I actually saying when I'm singing this song? Yeah. Do I actually know what I'm saying, or am I just like saying it.
Right.
And so I would challenge anybody who hears this too. It's like when you sing worship at church, it's like actually try and think, like mentally reflect and mentally try to actually practice and understand what you're saying instead of just like regurgitating words on a screen.
That's also, that can also why I love, like, I love the old hymns, because I feel like they make you, like, the language is so, which is kind of a hurdle, I think, for a lot of people, because the language is just different than the way that we talk today in some of them.
Yeah.
But it's such, it's so rich in what's being said. And it really makes you, I kind of like the fact that the words are a little bit outside of our vocabulary today, because it makes you pay attention and like makes you actually think about, what am I actually saying when I'm singing this? And what does it mean? And they're just like,
yeah,
it's just, I've just
always, God is a bulwark never failing.
You're like, what okay, the heck's a bulwark? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, how many times have you though, if you're in a church where they sing that song, how many times have you actually taken them? Like, I probably sang that song 20, 25 times, or at least heard it, before actually ever taking the moment to be like, maybe I should look up what a bulwark actually is. Because I've been seeing it a lot, but I don't really know what that is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's powerful imagery when you actually know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would, there, one reason I like hymns too, because there are a lot of hymns that are just like, I like songs that are just very matter of fact, that are just like,
yeah,
God is good. Just songs that I'm like, I know exactly what I'm saying. Not to say that songs that don't do that are bad, but sometimes it's like they're rich and deep metaphors within songs, and we're just like, and I'm just like, I don't really know exactly what I'm saying, but I'm singing it because it's like, right, what's what you do. So it's good to reflect on that. But hey, I appreciate you coming on and everything.
Yeah,
and
hopefully I made some sense. I need to get better at not just like rambling and collecting my thoughts So
I thought you made perfect sense.
All right.
I thought you made perfect sense. So do you have any shows or anything that are coming up soon?
Christmas show. You and your wife should come. It'll be a nice time.
Okay.
Get some friends.
Where's it at?
The Oaks Theater in Oakmont.
The Oaks Theater.
It's December 6th.
When is it?
December 6th and 7th. It's like, so this was the, I think it's the 7th year we're doing this Christmas show.
Oh, dang. Okay.
It's 6th or 7th. Yeah. I was looking back at the folders on my computer because I have a folder from each year, but I think I left out a folder from the first year. I must have saved that on a different hard drive. Oh, that's also why it leads me to now question when I actually started doing it. But yeah, it's fun. And I've kind of now at this point, I play gigs and stuff randomly here and there for different events and like small local stuff, but I usually do like two of my own shows, like one in the summer and then the Christmas one. So yeah, they're fun, and it's always scary though, because I only do a handful of shows now, and so I get nervous when the shows come, because now that I have little kids too, like I get sick more often. Like last year, show, the first day was good, but the second show, oh man, I was so sick.
And because you don't get in that rhythm of just like doing
shows. Well, it just bums me out too. Like I only get to do this a handful of times a year.
Oh yeah.
And of course I can't be at my best. Like that sucks. But
yeah,
we'll see if I can make it this year.
That's a downside of kids. I swear everybody have like little kids. They're just like, hey, I'm sick again. Or they're sick again. I'm like, oh, geez, that's the worst. But
it is what it is.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I think last year we might have had a fall retreat then for our high schoolers. But this year I'll talk to her. Try to make it out to that. That sounds cool.
Try working out.
Sounds cool. Yeah. Sweet. Well, I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, man. No problem at all.